This is an open period for public comment. This is an opportunity for the public to provide brief, and I emphasize brief, comments on items relevant to council business but not otherwise listed on the agenda. If you run too long, I will cut you off. Anyone with any business they'd like to bring before the council that's not on the agenda? Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Bob Maxwell from West Creek, New Jersey. I'm also an advisor for a limited access scallop fishery. I'm asking the council if they would consider separating the two advisor panels and making a separate advisor panel for the general cat, the IFQ fishery. It seems like there's a lot of issues that are very important to the limited access fishery, and there's also things that are important to the IFQ fishery, and I think that we could make more headway if we had our own advisor panels. It's just a consideration, and the bands were paying a recovery cost that the agency is being paid to monitor our fishery. I think that we should be entitled to that. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is David Tedford, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak here. I will second that motion there, being I'm a general category scout fisherman also out of Maryland. And I'm approaching the council today to try to get some solution to a big problem that we're having. We just don't have enough allocation. All of the general category, probably a high percentage of the general category scout fishermen are not making a living with the current situation that the council has placed upon them. I have been very proactive trying to seek some solutions to this problem of the general category not being able to make a living with their days that they are allocated and the amount of permits, the leasing situation, the expense of that, being a lot of that's $2 a pound. In Ocean City, our scallops are selling for $5.85. You take $2 a pound off of that, you're down to $3.85 as of last week, and that's not enough money to operate. There's a lack of these leasing, the ability to lease these permits, and we need some sort of solution. I've been talking to our Congressman Cradaville, Barbara Mikulski's office, and the governor of Maryland, and they have drafted a letter. I'm sorry, I don't have any copies of it today, but it was sent email to Mr. Paul Howard, and I would like to read that as fast as possible, and I'll try to close after that. It will give you some light of, and I don't necessarily agree with a lot of the suggestions that our DNR and our governor's office has come up with, but I'm open for suggestions to try to get some kind of solution to this problem. We've got people in our area are losing their homes. I know of two that have lost their homes already because of lack of IFQ. And anyhow, I'll read it. Try not to take so much more of your time. Dear Mr. Now, this is coming from Tom O'Connell. He is the Director of Fisheries in Maryland and the Governor's Office. Senator Barbara Mikulski is behind us, and Congressman Cradaville is behind this issue also. And the letter reads to Mr. Howard, and I didn't know who to go to, but thank you for your continued efforts in managing our fisheries resources along the Atlantic coast. As you are aware, Amendment 11 to the Scallop Fisheries Management Plan has affected many fishermen along the East Coast. Specifically, harvesters out of Ocean City, Maryland, have been significantly limited to their ability to harvest scallops. Sustainable fisheries management is a priority for Maryland and our stakeholders. We fully understand the challenges of trying to balance conservation measures with socioeconomic impacts and hope that the council will consider the following strategies to help improve to help both to improve the health and the resource to mitigate the economic impact of Amendment 11 on the Maryland scallop fishermen. In case you're not aware, the majority of Maryland scallop fishermen harvesters operate small-scale vessels that enter the fishery during a time of rapid change in both the fisheries and the regulatory environment. These individuals made specific, significant investments to enter the fishery and are now faced with a dire economic situation. Several fishermen did not meet the qualifying criteria. Others met the qualifying criteria but received a scallop allocation that may not be large enough to keep their fishing businesses economically viable. We are concerned that many Maryland scallopers may not be able to survive financially during this transitional period as both the fishermen and the financing institutions adjust to our new regulatory environment. And there are several options that Maryland would like to propose that would expand the opportunities for our scallop fishermen. First, it is our understanding that the Sustainable Fisheries Act Amendment Section 1104A of the Title 11 of the Merchant Marine Act and Section 303D/4 of the Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Conservation and Magnuson Act, the New England Fisheries Management Council could request that the National Marine Fisheries Service establish a program that makes favorable financing available to specific categories, new entries, small-scale fishermen of the general category, scallop fishermen. Such a lending facility would allow new entries and small-scale fishermen like those in Maryland to acquire and lease the general category permits and increase their allocation. Second, Maryland would appreciate support from the New England Fisheries Management Council for a request to NOAA to expand the grant program that is currently funding the establishment of state-operated permit banks for the Northeast ground fish permits to include the Mid-Atlantic states and sea scallop permits. These permit banks will allow states to maintain an access to local resources for local boats. Third, we request the National New England Fisheries Management Council to allow permit banks to purchase limited access permits to be converted into general category scallop quota. Amendment 11 reduced the percentage of the scallop total allowable catch that is available to the general category fleet from a maximum of 14% in 05 to 5 in 010. The purchase of limited access permits for the purpose of restoring access to the general category fleet is entirely appropriate and in keeping with a market-based approach that was adopted by the Council in Amendment 11. This mechanism could restore access without taking anything away from the limited access fleet involuntarily. Just a little bit more. Fourth, we would ask New England Fisheries Management Council to create an inshore scallop management area that would be managed for the general category fleet with the objectives of bringing about similar increases in scallop yield as have been seen through the improved management of offshore scallop grounds. Fifth, access to the capital is an essential component of market-based fisheries allocation programs like the general category scallop ITQ. Financial institutions need to know that their security interest in fishing permits and quota shares is recognized and recorded. A workable central registry system would be an important tool for improving financing for vessels of all sizes in the limited access fishery, and we would ask that you formally support an establishment such as a central lien registry. Due to the nation's commitment to protect jobs, we ask that you consider opportunities for these fishermen in the future management decisions. Again, we appreciate your decision to responsible management of our coastal fisheries, and this is Tom McConnell from he's a director of fisheries in Maryland. I don't necessarily agree with all these, but I'm open for suggestions to help the general category fleet get by this trying time that we are having with limited allocation. And this gentleman, through the limited access scallop committee suggestion, I think it would be a good idea for us to separate, and maybe we can have some kind of better communication with what needs to be done with the general category fleet so that we all can prosper in a time when the scallop situation in the ocean is at a high. And I thank you for your time. If you got any questions, shoot, and if not,
You said the letter to Paul Howard?
Yes, I did. I sent a letter to him March 12th regarding the situation, and he said that he was going to, I have that too, but I don't want to take time to read it. He said he was going to forward it to the SCALP committee in their June and July meetings. And after that fact, I had a meeting with the, we in Maryland had a meeting with the Eastern Shore delegates, and it's kind of spurred this letter coming from the governor and the concern of our delegates in our area that we are, you know, we're in a dire situation there in Maryland. I've got 7 days a year I can work. My friend Brian over there's got nine. There's two. There's five. And there's one boat in Ocean City working. Last year there was 40. And the leasing situation is so high that, you know, we can't afford to lease any history. So I'm looking forward to making some conversation, and we're open for suggestions. But I don't know what to do here. But I'll be in contact, and thank you for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Megan Lapp, American Alliance of Fishermen and Their Communities. I have a question, if anybody can answer it. I did a bit of digging of amendments of other fisheries management councils in other parts of the country. And in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Island ground fishery, there is an amendment called Amendment 80 that is very, very similar to Amendment 16. Now, I don't pretend to have read all 800-something pages of Amendment 16 or however many pages there are of Amendment 80. But from what I can see, the very basic principles, the basic setup, everything is pretty much the same for that one and for Amendment 16, with the exception that they, what we call sectors, they call cooperatives. But the basic setup is the same. But on the West Coast, theirs is a limited access privilege program, and Amendment 16 has been deemed not to be in a limited access privilege program. The only significant difference that I can see is that on the East Coast, for New England, a referendum is required for that type of program, and then on the West Coast, it is not. And as the gentleman from the University of Connecticut and the University of Rhode Island demonstrated yesterday, there is not the amount of support required to carry that referendum to push through Amendment 16 in New England. So if anybody on this council can explain to me the differences between Amendment 80 and Amendment 16 and why Amendment 16 is not a limited access privilege program, but Amendment 80 is, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
I can speak for myself. I've never read Amendment 80 to the Bering Sea Plan. I don't know. Have other council members read it? Mary Beth has.
I have read it, and actually work for a company that has three vessels operating under the Amendment 80 plan to the Bering Sea ground fishery. And there are differences, there are similarities, but there are differences. And I guess the one question about, I could defer to Gene, but I think I know what his answer will be. The referendum is required for an IFQ fishery. It's not required for a limited access privilege program. So that particular question I don't think is pertinent to either program. But the one thing I would say about the Amendment 80 program in comparison to Amendment 16 is that it's much simpler. I think that's the biggest difference.
Okay, anyone else? Rich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know the skates were discussed yesterday, and we came up with a 5,000-pound trip limit. But going back to my question of the boats that are not fishing, is there any way we can look midterm at where the stocks are, what the landings are? Our data is going to be much better this year. And if we're not reaching the TAC, can the landings of 5,000 be increased? It's a deep concern, and it's happening, and a lot of the boats aren't going to be fishing in New Bedford, and these are the boats that usually target skate. I just hate to see a resource go to waste without looking at it midterm. So I'm asking the question. I didn't get an answer yesterday. If they're using 100% capacity, where we're looking at a 50% reduction. So if you please look at that. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name's Brian Lowry, scallop fisherman out of Ocean City. I notice IFQ thing's new, and it's probably got a lot to be worked out, but, I mean, you think you do things the right way. They say you needed 1,000 pounds. You go out, try to secure yourself with 1,000 pounds, spend money on a boat, and next thing you know, there are all these 62% of this factor and that factor. I mean, I would just like to plead my case and say if it's something you could do to help us to hurry this thing up, it ain't no way I can make a living working 9 days a year. And I've spent about $300,000 to, which I thought I was spending the right way to do this job. You know, I knew about the control date, and, but if you could hurry things up here to help us out a little bit, I'd appreciate it. And that's all I got to say. I mean, I just don't know. I knew about the control date, but I never seen none of these other percentages and all these other factors. It more or less left everybody with nothing. I mean, what's 9 days? Shit, I can't pack my raft, pay my slip rent down the ocean, and put paint on my boat for that, let alone, you know, make boat payments. If you could just do something to help us. I mean, I'm a fisherman. I've done it since I've been 15 years old. Now they're getting ready to go to IFQs in Chesapeake Bay, which that's where I was, you know, born and raised and where I started to work. Now I've been in the ocean 5 years. I've missed the control date by year, so I don't have, you know what I mean? Like I say, I bought a little bit of history, but I missed that by year. Now I ain't been home to work. They're getting ready to go to it there. I've caught nothing there because I've been scalping for 5 years. Everywhere I've turned, I'm left with nothing. Been doing it since I've been 15. Just do something to help us out in this fishery. I would greatly appreciate it. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything further? Hands everywhere. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Joanne Poffenberger from Empire Fisheries in Stonington, Connecticut. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak. I would like to ask what strides are being made toward Chairman Pappalardo's request in December 2009 to Secretary Locke to improve the fishery management process. The chairman stated that our bureaucracy is often driven by process and protocol rather than by mission and outcome. Many in the industry have been led to believe that the council process is broken. Is this a valid assumption? Was this letter in reaction to the Scallop Framework 21 vote reconsideration? Or is this sentiment genuine and still valid? Can the council respond directly or indirectly as to the status of this request? Thank you.
I can give you a brief. The request was from me personally, not from the council. And I have a meeting set up in 2 weeks, I think, with leadership and NOAA to further discuss my request in the letter, the response letter that they sent me. I'm not sure if the response letter was in the binder or not. But if it's not, I can make that available. If I remember correctly, the response said that said a couple of things. One was that there was mutual concern on the part of NOAA on some of the issues that I raised in my request, and that there was a willingness to work with me to help define that request that I made into a workable product that wouldn't just be another study put on a shelf. And I don't remember the exact name of the part of the government or that they recommend do the study. I think it was the general auditing body. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I'm stumped. But they came up with the name of a independent group that's funded by the government but supposedly is not political. and they recommend them to conduct the study, but they want to help further define what's going to be studied so that we can get a resolve. I'll be happy to get the letter to you if you want to leave your name and address, and I'll make sure the response letter is in the binder, if it's not now, for the next council meeting. Anything further? Yes, ma'am. Please remember brief. We've got a lot of people that want to comment.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chairman, members, ladies and gentlemen of the council. May 1st is upon us in a few days, momentous times. I'm sure some folks here believe they've done a wonderful bit of regulatory policy making and reasoning, and it might be the peak of evolution. And of course, there are other folks who might disagree with that, as we hear out of various sources of either polling or just research, like I believe yesterday's study by Polnack and Pomeroy, where not everybody is agreeing with that perspective. Since there is going to be significant disruption on the shoreside communities, since there is significant challenges on a regulatory level about how to enforce the policy, the question has always been on our minds, Susanne Altenburger, Phil Boucher and friends from Glasgow Design Boats. Our question has always been why EDF and Pew were essentially opened the door to, so they essentially walk in and push a particular agenda. Because when you look at their websites, their studies, their public perspectives, their absence of call to conferences or papers, there is no integrated definition of ecosystem-based fisheries management policies. We all know how to spell it now, our spell checker does it, we know how to say it fast and rapid. But folks at Pew and EDF have made a point, and I have it now in writing too, fortunately, most recently from Pew in New England, that they have simply no interest in a sustainable fishing fleet in terms of greenest conceivable hardware. Even a modest amount of R&D is not in the policy. I first heard it from Ms. Julie Worms. I tried to find out about it from Ms. Sally McGee over the last 6 years in letters and telephone calls. Was always uncommunicative. There simply is apparently no policy task on the roster of those folks' work that includes the sustainability of the fishing fleet, and therefore implicitly of the shoreside communities as well. And as you all would understand, in the age of Priuses, hybrid escalates, and airlines fighting over the most effective jet plane they could buy, fuel consumption, carbon footprint does matter. Even in their discussion of buyout, as was discussed earlier this morning, I gather, looking at that paperwork, there still is no discussion on anybody's level whether people should not be maybe offered an opportunity to migrate laterally, drawing on this rich body of federal policies of decades ago, where there was a fleet building program, that we could use a fleet restructuring program with incentives, loan guarantees, grants. None of this is on those good folks' minds, that they really believe it's just the resource, not the industry, not the fisheries, the fleet itself, or what's happening on a land base. And, of course, if I were even just talking to myself, and I won't be that much longer, you would say, well, Suzanne, you're just having a spee in your bonnet. Well, the problem is that there's no serious source of information in which you will be told that fuel will ever become cheap again. In fact, it might double in the foreseeable future. And the fleet, through this regulatory program, through this big, major paradigm change, if you want to use that big word, your body of work over the last 3 years, Mr. Prevett would say, was inevitable. We were going there anyway. But he never entered the language. Maybe we should encourage folks to be prepared for $4 and $5 a gallon while we are upsetting so much of the way we do business. So it's a rather remarkable spectacle, because EDF and Pew folks probably arrived here in a Prius, but they never offered the fishing industry the equivalent of something like that. Whether folks would have taken it or not, leave it up to the fishermen to decide. Anybody who survived this far ain't no fool. But some folks would have looked at a well-meant offer. So I now have it on absolute certain language that neither Pew or EDF have it within their body of work. No conference, no contribution to discussion, no position paper, nothing. And unfortunately, that spirit has migrated all the way to near the White House to Ms. Lubchenco, who has a valiant and very purpose-driven history of doing science for the sake of the resource, the sustainability of a number of levels of what she was focusing on her work. She tried to do the right thing. Unfortunately, or fortunately, Working in D.C. is different than going to an EDF retreat. D.C. is a different universe where questions of conceptual coherence do matter. You don't want to embarrass Mr. Obama or anybody near there by being incoherent in your single-legged stool model of sustainability when you actually need a tripod of sustainability for it to be stable long-term, hence the word sustainability. It is resource management, which you folks have been working on for decades, and you and your forebears here, but also sustainable fishing fleet that can survive at $4 and $5 a gallon, and therefore sustainable shoreside communities without which nothing happens. Period. So since our good green friends, and I believe I may be leading a lower carbon lifestyle than they might be, since they're proposing a 33% solution to 100% challenge, I find it rather mystifying while they're still being treated with this much respect, that they have this much of their way, including some of the sort of ugly angle of freezing people out. There are certain members of this council who mean well, who were never really included in there with their perspectives on it. On the other hand, after 2,000 hours of discussing this and pushing for it in writing in various fora with fishermen, remember we signed up 40 local fishermen and a few other folks, we will be commencing this summer a project funded by federal, state, and local money, plus a cooperation with for-profit and non-profit folks in Gloucester, a very small project, but to simply get the foot in the door what things could be like. If we had for the last 7 years, I believe I first talked to you, Mr. Papalardo, in 2003 on the way out of the tavern in Gloucester when you were still in your regular council position, I believe. National Fishermen covered this in 2004 and in their own way, but it was quite sensible and quite respectful. So this project will commence, and we hope to be able to at least show in one angle a very early light entry level approach to this, and there will be ample opportunity to in the publicity of this project, since it is funded by federal, nothing to do with NOAA, by the way. This is a larger agency than NOAA, in part. There will be ample opportunity to share with folks who look at this, to share why Amendment 16, why the sector management program, while all this has no space, no encouragement, no conceptual connection to a lower carbon fleet, because again, it's not my hang-up here. It may sound like one, because I keep coming at you folks, and you keep receiving me reasonably respectfully, even though I make no progress. I'll make my progress elsewhere. The question is, how come the fleet is unprepared, completely unprepared, for which just about everybody sensible in the energy universe will say is happening in slow motion? It might happen earlier this year, later this year, with creeping up towards $4. Why has this council and this lengthy process, as Mr. Preble pointed out, the inevitability of, why has this council process, after so many hundreds, if thousands, if not millions of man hours of serious work by so many well-meaning folks, whose life work in many ways is reflected in this, why has it not produced a coherent definition of sustainability? Because it is not just the resource, it's the sustainability of the fleet, in the age of high energy cost and the sustainability of the shoreside communities. That one-legged stool model, I think, will come to haunt quite a few folks. I don't know what it's going to be career under for some, but it's an interesting narrative to see how inconsistent certain policies that were pushed at this council. You folks tried to work in the spirit of the times. You tried to do the right thing for the most part. Why this was this successful to run this far? And because you won't be able to get around the fact that this current, as I start 2 days from now, but this system of management will leave the industry utterly exposed to powers that are beyond you and me, and ain't no conspiracies, just the oil spot market. And I thought, and I think many folks, civilian out here who just eat their fish, who take an interest in the fisheries by visiting shoreside communities, they would be wondering how come in 2010 there's been no voice on this council, at least sneak a couple of one-liners in it, either for R&D, and I'm not hitting you guys up for money. I never asked any Gloucester fishermen for money in the last 8 years. 2,000 hours is on my book. That's what took my money off my table. How come there is not a single line of respect for the fact that this big process has not a single shred of notion about low carbon, and how to give fishermen a chance at survival if they only have an allocation of 25K of cod or something. Because I understand from one of the biggest, richest scallop owners in New Bedford, he tells you that he may not survive $5 a gallon remotely either. And that's a strange effect strange affair at the end of this lengthy process that nobody has been encouraged, slightly nudged, as their efforts have been legitimized on the council level to be prepared for that which will happen, over which you will have no control. And there's a massive failure on everybody's level here to address the point, to bring it to the forefront. My husband came to you, Mr. Papalardo, last February in Portsmouth. He gave you 30-ounce heavy a binder of his effort and our effort to push this particular issue forward, because we thought it's an integral part of fisheries management to prepare the fleet in ways by gentle nudges and incentives. And I came to sadly discover the other day in my mailbox that you sent it back. You sent it back with a note, I may want to recycle the plastic binder. That's quite something. You might as well toss it to my husband's headstone. That's ugly stuff. The good thing is we all kept careful notes. My husband was known to be a writer since 1948. His name has some currency. It'll be a good read what didn't happen in this industry, where PU and EDF catastrophically failed, and where the industry, along with the seafood consuming folks on land who believe this body of experts is in the business of making sure both the resources sustainable but also the steady supply of seafood to the American kitchen table and the dinner table and the restaurant table. For that to be at risk by an absolute unpreparedness because of a single-minded pursuit by our good friends from EDF and PU, this one policy will be the fix at all. That monomaniacal thing, they'll be held to pay for the consequences of it, not from me, but folks will be asking questions. And I wonder why that has been necessary to go this ugly over these years. Why would you send back this note? He submitted it to you as a council chairman.
I think you misunderstand what I did. I read everything in that binder, and then I offered it back to you so that you could give it to someone else so they could be educated on what was in the binder.
Well, I've got no response to you on the substance of the binder, and it's been 14 months since we first presented it to you, and nothing happened. We discussed, maybe we should discuss energy before Amendment 16 would be passed last June. No resonance, and that was it. And my husband found it very hard to swallow that mindset, because not just because he's he, but because it is a very serious issue. And it has been a massive failure for almost 7 years in your personal case. There has been no resonance. And the Cape Cod Gilmet Netherlands Association, I don't think they're a shining example of low-carbon operations either. So it's a strange track record. It's tragic. And fortunately, I'm not directly affected by it, except that I'm out about 2,000 hours. But it'll make a good read, and folks will be designed and built without this council, and probably even without NOAA encouragement, as odd as it may be in the age of Obama and progressive thinking and concerns about climate change and energy dependencies. Thank you for your patience, and I'm sure that Ms. McGee will have nothing to say as usual. But one question to you, Ms. McGee. Is the grapevine correct that it's the study
okay.
by Mr. Palmer?
Okay. You can write a letter to her organization. This is the council.
I get no response. But I should go check on it too, because when you
don't. Dave Gatham.
Yeah, Suzanne, I just wanted to just say something to her. I know you called and you talked to my wife for an hour and a half the other day, and you know, I haven't had time to call you back because there's only so many hours in the day, but the reason people can't, a lot of people will not be able to use the vessels you've designed at this time is because of our length and horsepower restrictions. Now, if this sector program works as it's envisioned to work in a couple of years, we may be able to consider removing those length and horsepower restrictions, but we can't do it at this time. So the only people that can use the vessels as they're designed are people that have that length of vessel now. And I'm sorry, there's just nothing we can do about that at this time. Maybe in 2 years or 3 years, if this sector program works as it's envisioned to work, we might be able to change those requirements. But, you know, we want you to know that it isn't we're ignoring you. It's just simply that, these are restrictions that are in the laws at this time, and we can't change them because it'll increase capacity in the fleet, and we're trying to decrease it. So I don't want to get into a debate today or anything. I just wanted you to know that we're not ignoring your request. We just can't deal with it at this time.
I understand that, and I particularly appreciate your personal gesture. I did reach out, and I appreciate your constraints. But after 7 years, I think it would have been conceivable to weave this discussion gradually into the basic regulatory narrative, because the energy issue has been coming for many, many years. I do understand the constraints about length limitation, but those are one of the many peculiarities. It would be very hard to explain that this may be the only industry in which this has been allowed to stand for that many years. It was challengeable. It's a process of many amendments, and it would have been conceivable to have a summit, a discussion. Do we really want to live with these absurd regulations? Because it would not have increased capacity. You could have offered people to go long and lean and skinny and say, listen, no matter what kind of boat you'll be driving, I'll leave it up to you what kind of length you have, what kind of power you have. No, we won't give you the free power, but at least we give you whatever length you want to play with. But we won't allow you to go beyond the weight for which you have a permit. The weight limitation would be a shift from length to weight. It would have been possible for the last 8 years. And that would have produced a fleet that would have gradually moved towards lower carbon, less dependence, and therefore you could have made it at limited allocation. And so that's the one that's really hard to explain, because we're now in the third generation of Priuses, and we still don't have anything like this in the water. The individual fisherman has no such money right now. This is what we never ask anybody. But to not even encourage R&D, that's stunning. I appreciate your position. Thank you.
Time for one or two more comments. We've already run over a half an hour. Gentleman in the back, in the way back.
Thank you. My name is Harold Loftus from Point Judith, Rhode Island. I've been a fisherman for 50 years. First of all, I think my personal opinion is change the name of NOAA to PUES. Change the name of National Marine Fisheries to EDF. That being said, Iceland has a privatized catch share market, and it violates international law. And this was done by the UN. Can't we learn by other people's mistakes? It seems to me, if they're going back on this, after going through what we're going to go through and destroy up to 75% of our fishermen, it seems to me somebody's thinking wrong. I'm not saying this quite the way I want to say it, but this is the best I can do. This whole system is screwed up. Catch shares is a house of cards, and Amendment 16. And believe me, after May 1st, the wind's going to blow, and down comes the house of cards. And who's going to be left? There's people on this council that are going to be left that are feathering their own nest. John, you're one of them. Jimmy Odlin. Buying up permits, he's another one. And Vito, I'm not quite sure about you. I know you're probably trying to help the people in Gloucester, but you're feathering your nest too. Now, there's something wrong with this. You're going to have 25% of the people winners, and that 75% of us are going to be losers. Now, that's not right. National Marine Fisheries Service is so corrupt, it's unbelievable, and yet things go on as usual. And I don't believe they're ever going to change unless we get mad enough, and I hope we are now. Thank you.
Last comment, sir.
Very simply, because I want you all to see what is going to go down in 2 months. This is my boat. I've got almost $1 million into it. It supports five families. It has with about eight kids involved. They're all going to be out of work in, I would say, 2 months at the most. My name is Dick Graycheck, by the way. I'm from Stonington, Connecticut, and I'm the Connecticut representative for the American Alliance of Fishermen and their communities. Here's four more boats. Good boats. Good boats. In fact, I owned one of them. That are going to be gone in a couple of months. The reason is, I'll give you my personal story. It's very simple. It's very quick. I know it's close to lunch and everybody's blood sugar is gone probably, but I need for you to hear me. I need you to see my face, and I need you to see the face of all the people that you're going to be putting out of work with Amendment 16. It's very simple. Very simple. I got, for an allocation, the amount of fish that the captain, I have two captains on this boat, by the way, to keep it going just to try to pay bills. We haven't made expenses in over a year. In other words, I'm going into debt every month. The reason I stay with it is because there's no way out. There's no buyout. There's no relief. And my $450,000 license isn't worth anything now because of all the uncertainty and because of the crappy allocation I got. I bought this boat. This is the Anne Catherine. This is my boat. I bought this boat in 2005. I bought it. It was in rough shape, but it was sound. So I bought it because she's very seaworthy. She's a tank. The boat I had was also a good boat, but it was too small. And the guys were fishing in the middle of the winter for fluke. And one of these days, I know she was going to get swallowed up. They weren't going to come home. So I said, okay, I'll go for it. I'll invest. I'm 65 years old. I'm retired. I'm trying to retire. My retirement is right here, and I'm going to lose it. It's just a matter of months I'm going to lose this. So I bought this boat, and I put about $250,000 into it initially. Laid it up for a year. So we didn't start fishing. We fished a couple of months in 2006. Okay, and they were shakedown cruises. Stuff was breaking left and right. We had to change the gear, et cetera, et cetera. So the qualification period for this license, which, by the way, had maximum days when I bought it, so that was the currency at the time, and this switches the currency on me, okay? But the person who owned this boat before me had three other boats. He didn't fish a whole lot. He stayed out for a year or two. That didn't matter when I bought the boat because the currency was days at sea then. Now you've changed it. And this boat does half of its fishing in squid and scup. The other half is groundfish. I'll tell you what I got for groundfish. I got 7,000 pounds of cod. You do that in the first tow, if you get on them right away. Okay, I got 56,000 pounds of haddock. That could be one tow too when you're on. I got 3,000 pounds of yellowtail flounder. I got 1,000 pounds of gray salt. I have no southern New England winter flounder, which was one of our mainstays. I got nothing because the whole thing is shut down for no reason. There's plenty of them around. So I have 1,000 pounds of George's Bank winter flounder. I have 4,000 pounds of redfish. I have 1,000 pounds of white hake. And I have 2,900 pounds of pollock. Now, anybody who's ever gone pollock fishing knows you either have nothing or you got a boatload in no time. I can't go fishing with this. I don't have money to buy other people's poundage. I don't know if they're going to keep me in the damn sector with this. And I've got 10 emails at home on my computer from our sector manager. I don't even know what he's talking about. He wants to know what we're going to be doing May 1st. I said, you tell me what the weather will be. You tell me what the fish prices are. You tell me where the fish are, and I'll tell you what I'm doing May 1st. I have no idea what my boat's going to do Saturday. But this is a situation, and I'm not alone. I'm not going to speak for everybody. I want to put a face on what you have passed and what it's going to do to me, okay? To me. And five families, and these are all specialized guys. It's a good crew. They're sober, and they work hard, and they know what they're doing. There's a lot of experience. Most of them are close to 50 years old, 40 to 50 years old. So they're not going to go work at McDonald's. they're going to be out of work. You're talking about putting a lot of people out of work, and a lot of kids are going to start to go hungry. Literally. Literally. Now, my retirement's wrapped up in this. We'll lose our home. We'll lose, and that's probably all we have, we'll lose just about everything in 2 months. So I want to put a face on it, and I didn't sleep last night. This stuff was rolling in my head so much. And I'm glad I'm not angry. I was afraid of that. I was afraid of getting really angry. I'm more hurt and depressed than angry right now. And this whole setup here is very dysfunctional. This is extremely intimidating to come up here. You're all sitting behind your computers and looking at me. It's very difficult to sit here and be honest and tell you what's really going on. We should be in groups of 4, 5, 6, 7, sitting around a table, face to face, no computers, no microphones, sitting there saying, look, this is what's happening to me. This is what's happening here. What do you want? What are you doing? We could do it that way. We, you know, we can make this, there's tons of fish out there. We can make this fishery work. It takes integrity, and it takes people not protecting themselves. It takes people taking a chance. I got nothing to lose. I'm old enough where I got nothing to lose. I'm going to tell you right where it's at. You really are going to destroy an entire industry for no reason with Amendment 16. It does not make any sense. The rest of the world is trying to move away from that. Iceland, New Zealand, the European Union for 25 years has had a quota system they're trying to move away from. It's not going to work, folks. And there's going to be a lot of suffering needlessly, and you're going to ruin a good source of healthy food. Good food, clean food. No antibiotics, no melamine, no nothing. Just clean food. And there's a lot of it out there. And I don't care what your computer models say, there's the fish are what we say is ass deep. And you can't get away from that. So I just needed to make that statement. Thank you. And we'll go to lunch now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll take a 1-hour recess for lunch. Be back in an hour.